What's up, guys? Just jumping in here quickly to let you know I did have some audio issues for the first quarter of the podcast, but that does go away. Also, stick around at the end. We have a brand new segment called Flip Weekly After Dark, which is the worst thing I've ever made. It would not be coming back, and I hate myself for thinking it was a good idea. Enjoy the podcast.
Flip, 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 Flip Weekly.
What's up, guys? It's Matt here from FlipWeekly.com. You're listening to the Flip Weekly podcast. This is a podcast all about reselling, going to garage sales and thrift stores, finding items to resell online for a profit. And it's been a big week here. You know, your boy has had the chance to talk to the media. So, right, I sat down figuratively with Yahoo News, and we had a conversation about thrifting in Australia and all the problems that come with it. You know, I posted a video on social media last week and it took off. A couple of 100,000 views all over social media. And obviously the media would be seeing that it's trending and they want to ask a few questions about the topic. Now, the topic was going into a Vinnie's thrift store, questioning if op shops are too expensive in Australia, and finding within the glass display case Harry Potter books priced so fucking high, absurdly high, way too high. As if Harry Potter himself had delivered them to the thrift store. Now, the books that they were selling were first edition Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows and first edition Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. If you haven't seen the video that I put out, go check it out on Instagram and TikTok under Flip Weekly. You will see that they've written on the tags that these are rare. They're hard to find. They have their spelling errors in them. And They're basically saying that these books are worth a lot of money. They're in hardcover format. At least they've got that going for it, you know. Imagine if they were trying to pawn these for $1,000 and they were paperback books. No, they were hardcover. And you just, you know, if you read or listen to Flip Weekly, man, you would know that these books are worth absolutely nothing. Really, they're worth absolutely nothing. And it was funny. I went in there and I saw them. Obviously, I pulled out my phone because I needed to record this. I needed to show everyone that Vinny's is trying to get away with murder, right? Like, these books sell on eBay every single day for like $15-$20. And some of that is with postage too. By the time these books came out, you know, Deathly Hallows and Half-Blood Prince, Harry Potter was so fucking popular. So popular. These books had insane print runs. I mean, in the video I say, Deathly Hallows had the biggest print run of all books in history. In history, something like 15 million or 12 million of these were printed, like in their first run. So all of those are first edition books. There's 12 or 15 million of these fucking things. And Vinny's is trying to say that they're rare and hard to find. I don't know about you. There are, I think, around 13 million Australian men. I do not think Australian men are rare and hard to find. We're fucking everywhere. You know, if you live in Bali right now, look out your window. There would be an Australian man out there. We are not rare. We are not hard to find. These Harry Potter books, they're not rare. They're not hard to find. I remember going in there and, you know, I had to like hold my tongue. I was almost like laughing out loud. And if you've ever seen me before out in public, I have such a like resting bitch face, right? Like if you look at me, you probably think that I'm there to murder everyone. But look, I was almost laughing out loud because I just knew that these weren't worth anything, you know? So I asked, you know, if I could have a look at these books, pulled them out, and I'm just going over them, just thinking like these are not worth anywhere near what they're listed for. The lady behind the counter said to me, "These must be pretty special." I was just like, yeah, they must be, because they're not. She said the manager priced them up. I don't know what the manager was drinking, but man, I don't even think if you look at active listings, you'll see like a Deathly Hallows book for $500, right? Like, I really don't think you'd see a first edition Deathly Hallows for $500 unless it's been sponsored. But every other listing should be, you know, the 15, 20, maybe like 30, 40, 50 if the book's in like immaculate condition, you know. But I don't know where they're finding that this is a like a $500 book. Not to mention Half-Blood Prince, an earlier version of like an earlier in the series of Harry Potter, being worth double that. Like, where are they getting these numbers that Half-Blood Prince is worth $1,000 first edition? I'm actually looking at eBay right now. You can get both in a bundle for $20 if you buy it right now. So where are they finding this information? Literally, where are they finding it? I want to know, where are they finding it? They know that there is a typo in Half-Blood Prince. So they know that. But where are they getting that typo is then worth $1,000? Because it's not on eBay, right? Like, any amount of research would be able to like quash this $1,000 price tag. So what is happening? How are they justifying this price? Even as I was leaving, another lady at the counter was like, "Can I have a look at this book?" She pulled it out, and as soon as she opened it, she was like, "Oh, this was printed in Australia." And it's like, isn't that a true first edition, right? Like, if you want one of the best Harry Potter books, first edition, first printing, whatever, printed in the UK, not printed in Australia. They're worth nothing. And I locked eyes with her, and we both smiled as if we're both thinking, like, like, what the fuck is going on here? What sort of rot did we stumble across? And in the interview that I did with Yahoo News, one of the questions they asked me was, what have I noticed about the price of items in charity stores in Australia? And do I think it's reasonable? Now, I didn't want to go heavy on thrift stores. You know, we make a lot of money from thrift stores, and there's good people working there, people with good intentions. The lady at the checkout said that the manager prices all these. Maybe that person, who knows? But I didn't want to come down too hard on them. So I just said, you know, Harry Potter books, that they weren't reasonable at all. It was based on incorrect information. I said that I don't mind if a charity store looks up an item and prices it based on its current market value. I've said this before in Flip Weekly. I do not care if they do that. I think that's completely fair. I don't think the charity shops owes it to their customers to price it below. I've said this. Go back and listen. You'll see my thoughts on this. My issue solely lies with these outrageous pricing, the outrageous prices that are based on flawed information, or, I mean, in this case, completely incorrect information. And that seems to be happening more and more. It is okay. Look, this is just my opinion. It is okay if you're pricing based on market value, but you need to be accurate. You can't just chuck a $1,000 price tag on a book and say it's a first edition and it's rare, it's hard to find, almost duping your customers. If somebody comes in with too much money, you know, and buys that book thinking that they've just got themselves something incredibly rare, is that wrong? I think that's fucking wrong. I don't know. I don't know what thrift stores are trying to do. They're trying to be the end seller. They're trying to be, you know, experts in all these different categories. And they're honestly, they're just not. They can't list up a book for $1,000, say it's rare, say it's a rare first edition, when it's just blatantly false. It's blatantly false. They can't, to me, they can't do that. I think they need to, like, stay in their lane. If they don't know something for a fact and they just can't put it out. And it goes for all of these fake, you know, clothing items that you see, like, in the thrift store too. And then, you know, when they're selling something like this, $1,000 book, when it's incorrect, it just puts a sour taste in my mouth when it comes towards, like, oh, you see a DVD and it's, you know, it's been burnt. It's blatantly fake, but they've stuck a price tag on it as if it's real, you know, like I give that a pass because there's only so much time in the day. They're getting through all these DVDs, but like, if you like, there's only so much goodwill, right? Like not the fucking American thrift store, like Goodwill. The old school word goodwill. There's only so much goodwill you can give somebody. And I'm not saying the goodwill is running out. You know, these charity shops do more good than harm, right? They don't really do much harm. But if you have a thrift store selling, you know, $1,000 Harry Potter book and it's worth $10, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're selling everything, like fake Pokemon cards from a couple of issues ago, and then, you know, you go on the clothing racks for the designer labels, they're charging hundreds of dollars and you can tell that it's fake. Like, everything is just priced as if it's actually real and legitimate, and it's just not. If they're pricing what people would expect in a thrift store, then that's, you know, fine. But when you're pricing items that are fake, that are counterfeit, as if they're real, and there's like no blowback to that. How is that okay? I do not want somebody going into a thrift store and getting scammed. That is not what a thrift store is for. A thrift store shouldn't be helping people. It should not be actively harming people. Like, I don't know. Can people get harmed for buying like a $1,000 Harry Potter book or fake Pokemon cards? Probably not, but they're wasting money. I do not want people wasting money in a thrift store. It just seems wrong, right? I don't know if I should be giving a moral lesson on fucking thrift stores, considering I go in there to make money, but it just doesn't seem right that there's just like this pattern emerging of you know, just sort of dodgy behavior. Now, when it came to the interview, I held back because I didn't say all that. I did not want to, you know, get fucking banned from thrift stores. But yeah, there's just like, there just is that pattern emerging, you know, thrift stores wanting to be antique dealers, but at the same time knowing absolutely nothing about antiques, wanting to be book dealers, not knowing anything about books. It's just, I don't know, this route that they're going down, it just seems, you know, like they've strayed so far from their original goal, you know. But anyway, the interview ended by saying, like, there's still fucking treasure to be found in thrift stores. Like I said, thrift stores don't know everything. They don't know, I mean, they barely know anything about a single category. We just have to, you know, outsmart them in a way. Like, that's how I see going into a thrift store. It's us versus the people looking up comps in the back. We just have to know the categories better. We have to keep learning. We have to just find ways to find profitable items in thrift stores. And with that said, that's what we've done this week with what I bought. I'm about to tell you, in what I bought, this insane book series that I'm sure you would have walked past at least once before, that sells for at least $100 per book, if not more. And if you find one in particular, $1,000 plus, sells constantly. Now we're going to get into what I bought, and we're starting off with a fucking massive score. So I've never heard of this book series before. I'm glad I found it though. I paid, what was it? $6, $6, and $5 for these books. So $17 total. And when I listed them up on eBay, I'm talking $400. They were just sitting there in a Vinnie's thrift store. No one was picking them up. No one was looking at them. But I spotted them, and here's why. We have three hardcover books all sitting next to each other. They have identical looking graphics on the spine. We have the author's name at the very top. So anyone could figure out that this is obviously some part of a series. The title of this series is called A Court of Thorns and Roses. It's by an author, an American author, called Sarah J. Maas. She's a fantasy author. She's responsible for this series, Throne of Glass series, Crescent City. I've never heard of any of these series, and yet they've sold over 40 million copies. So it shows how deep my head is buried in the sand that I have not heard of these books at all. So yeah, they're all sitting there in the thrift store, hardcover books. I'm just thinking, well, let's take a look at them. Let's see what they're worth. I'm not scanning the barcodes or anything like that. I don't comp that way. For this series, I was like, okay, let's bring up eBay. Let's bring up sold listings, and let's just Google the series name, A Court of Thorns and Roses, and see what comes up. We sort by highest to lowest, at least I did at that time, because I was like, let's see what sells for the most amount of money and work our way down and see if we can like match anything, you know? So at the very top of the list was the first book in the series called A Court of Thorns and Roses. And that book, first edition, sells upwards of $1,000, mostly because the first editions are usually signed in this book's case, it seems. Or at least the ones that sold are usually signed. So they sold comps like just under $2,000 for the first book that's been signed, and it's a hardcover with a dust jacket. But the most important thing here is the first edition and the first printing. Now, I couldn't find this specific book in the bookstore, in the thrift store. Once I found these three, I was like, well, is there any more? Apparently, there's five books in the series. I would love if I could find all five, but no, I could only find three. They were the second, third, and fourth book. So these books, they're called A Court of Mist and Fury, A Court of Wings and Ruin, and A Court of Frost and Starlight. Now, you don't need to remember these names, really. You just have to remember what the lesson is going to be. So hardcover books, when it comes to, you know, collectors, is usually more desirable. You know, if you have a first edition paperback versus a first edition hardcover, everyone will always pick the hardcover book. I was going through the sold listings to see what would come next, and I could see that these books that I found, if you could find the first edition and the first print of these books, for example, A Court of Mist and Fury, the first edition, first print, sells for $267 was the comp that I featured on the newsletter. All of the comps are around that mark, around the $250 and up mark. The other one, A Court of Wings and Ruin, around $150, and A Court of Frost and Starlight, between $150 and $250. So I'm thinking, great, all I need to do is confirm that these books are either like a first edition or, that's what I'm trying to confirm. Are they first editions, and what print run are they on? So I look up A Court of Mist and Fury. I confirm it's a first edition. I look at the print line. It's a first print. So we have the first edition, first print, hardcover with dust jacket. I'm like, fucking ka-ching, that's a $250 book. I go to the next one, A Court of Wings and Ruin. First edition, yes. Fourth print, not as desirable, with the hardcover and the dust jacket, that's at least $100-$150. And the final one, A Court of Frost and Starlight. First edition, I look at the print line, first print, hardcover with the dust jacket, that is like $150-$200 just there. And like I said, when it comes to book collectors, that first edition and the first print, they're the most sought after. And believe me, people are going to pay big money for these books, especially when they're in the hardcover format. So I found all three. I have no idea what the series is. I do a quick Google to see, like, what the fuck am I buying? And the Goodreads caption just says, from best-selling author Sarah J. Maas comes a seductive, breathtaking book that blends romance, adventure, and fairy lore into an unforgettable read. Okay, that sounds just like a fantasy romance book, right? Like, it's a popular topic, I guess. And it sold 40 million copies. So if it sold that many copies, then it should have a strong sell-through rate, which it does. And it should have an audience that buys these books regularly. And again, it does. So these books, how much did I spend? Like $17. Are going to go on to sell for $400. Now, when I was reading out the first edition, first print, you might be wondering, you know, how the fuck do you like understand what a first edition is, what a first printing is? You know, you open up the copyright page of books and you just see all of this information. You have no idea what the fuck any of it means. There's copyright information. There's like, it looks like gobbledygook, right? Well, just to help out Flip Weekly readers and podcast listeners, I've written out a guide, and the guide is all about how to tell if your book is a first edition. It's on the Flip Weekly website, flipweekly.com. It's completely free, and in the article, I just go through the entire process, and I use real-world examples for you. So if you're a visual learner, it's going to help you out big time. And I mean, if you're still confused after reading the article, just hit me up with any sort of like clarifying questions, and I'll answer them, and I might even include them in like a frequently asked questions section on the page. I might break down the process in a podcast later on, but it is on the Flip Weekly website, so you will be able to go through it yourself. And trust me, this is going to help you out a lot when it comes to buying books. Not every first edition is going to be worth money. You know, it was just the other day that I came across The Day After Tomorrow. Do you remember that sort of futuristic book where like the world freezes over? It was turned into a movie. I found a first edition hardcover copy of that. It's only worth like $10-$15, which is almost what the thrift store was selling it as. So not every single first edition is going to be worth money, but if you can spot what a first edition looks like or a first printing looks like on the copyright page, you're going to be well above every other reseller and the thrift store people. You know, they wouldn't have known that they were putting out $400 worth of books when they laid out these three books. So you just need to know this information, and I'm giving it to you for free, all on the website. Check it out. Just to reiterate what I was saying earlier, I don't know anything about this series when I was looking it up. I did the basic comp research, like I said, and it doesn't, you know, when you're looking at eBay listings, it doesn't exactly tell you about like the content of the book, does it? It just says the title. It just says, you know, the author. And even after reading that Goodreads blurb, I assumed like it was some sort of fantasy novel. But I showed my partner and she was like, well, you need to read chapter 55 of A Court of Mist and Fury. Now, let me tell you, I was not prepared for what I read. And you need to stay tuned to the end of this podcast because I'm going to read it out to you. And I'm just going to give you a note right now. Do not listen if you have children around. Do not put it on speaker because this book gets fucking weird. It is fucking weird. Now, something that isn't weird and something that's wholesome is the next cute find, which is a copy of Pingu on VHS. Found this in a thrift store for $3. Pingu, you might remember, was this 90s cartoon, the cartoon penguin, goes on little adventures with ABC. The ABC Kids logo on VHS is usually a sign that you can at least make a couple of dollars through it, and you'll know that like your listing will get plenty of people looking at it because, you know, grandparents, they love ABC Kids. They'll go on it and they'll find old school tapes. You know, if just picture like an older grandma if she's just sitting at her place with a VHS player and she's looking after the grandkids. She doesn't know how to work a DVD player. There's too many buttons on the remote. VHS is a trusty companion. She'll go and she'll buy this sort of stuff. And, you know, Pingu on the VHS has an incredible sell-through rate, really. It has 90%, 90.38%. And the average sale price for these VHS is sitting around the $50 mark, which is pretty crazy for like a 1996 animation or stop-motion animation kids show. You know, I'm checking out the sold listings now, and pretty much every single VHS of Pingu goes for like $60. And I couldn't find any exact comps for this specific one. It was called Pingu Makes a Discovery. And Pingu Makes a Discovery has only one active listing, no sold comps. It's on there for $160 with three people watching it. And I don't know, it appears to be an outlier, but at the same time, there's no other active listing. So maybe this person's just like taking advantage of the huge demand for Pingu on VHS and is seeing if anyone will buy it at $160. I think they're asking a bit too much money, so I'm not going to match their price. I'll aim for like the average sale price, which is like $50. But a reminder with your VHS, you have to look at the film before buying just to see if there's any mold. I've heard this is like a Australian problem. It's not a problem overseas, but yeah, you need to open up that case and check if there's any mold. And always test before listing it because you don't want to send off a VHS and it doesn't fucking work. I found when it comes to VHS tapes and players, if you snap a photo and you upload it to the listing, it's going to help your conversion rate. I've always sold VHS tapes and players quickly when I, you know, show a photo that it's actually working on a TV. And I think that buyers are going to like to see that it's actually working just so they know they're not going to get a tape that is fucked. Now, the next thing that I bought, I really paid up for it. And I think it's a problem within me that I can't leave these behind. It was an NRL jersey at Savers. And I was going to leave it behind just out of principle because it was priced up, man. And I think it was like $15 for the NRL jersey. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot considering people buy these jerseys for a lot of money, but it was $14.79. But I thought, no, I'm going to buy it because I can't leave a jersey behind for some reason. But I also thought it would be a quick flip if I was able to price this up on Marketplace for a decent amount. So I looked online at comps. It goes for about $50. And, you know, I don't want to be buying that many items for, I don't want to be selling too many items for $50. But Like I said, I thought I'd get a quick flip. I'm going to test it out. It was a 2013 South Sydney Rabbitohs NRL jersey. I chucked it up on Marketplace for $40 and $50 on eBay. That's usually the standard price for like a not exciting version of like an NRL jersey. So we'll see how we go with that. Any sort of jersey when it comes to like a national team is going to be worth at least looking up, doing your comp research. Like I said before, I've bought one for like $18 and sold it for over $500. So jerseys are a really good category to get into. You just need to be able to spot the sports teams' logos or even the sports teams. Now, garage sales over the weekend were few and far between. I don't know why. So I jumped onto Marketplace just a couple of times to see what was out there in between, you know, doing whatever I do on the weekend. And I found a couple of listings that I thought were potential home runs. So I'm going to go through the first one right now. So it was a PlayStation 2 console bundle, and the photo was what really attracted me to it. I'll describe the photo to you. There was only one. It was a straight-on photo of the PlayStation 2 console on the right within somebody's cupboard. You could see at least three controllers on top of it. You could see the SingStar microphones and their cables wrapped around with the cords of the controllers. On the left-hand side, you could see the tops of the PlayStation games inside the cases. You couldn't see the spine, so there's no idea what they were. But the game on the very top was a game called Canis Canem Edit, which is usually referred to as Bully. Now, that game is like a $30 game, but it's usually not one that I see on PlayStation 2 console bundles. You know, you usually see like your SingStars or your Buzz. So I was thinking, you know, I wonder if the games below that are going to be, you know, half decent. But the thing that really intrigued me and what got me like out of the house to buy this was in the description and in the photo, it said it also comes with this binder full of games. In the very back of the photo, you could see this huge red binder. It could fit maybe, just by the looks of it, like 100 games. And for this person to say it was full of games, I'm thinking, holy shit, am I going to find, you know, some of the holy grail PlayStation 2 games? Even without the cases, some of like the PlayStation 2 games, you know, horror ones or limited edition type like Silent Hills, they can go for hundreds of dollars. So I'm thinking, fuck, I want to commit to this. It was $100. The listing was $100, and I thought I'm going to play a new game, and the game is called the Facebook Marketplace Video Game Lottery. Because I have no idea what I'm buying, really. I know for a fact that at least the PlayStation console is worth minimum like $80 to $100. So if I sell that, providing it works, I'm, you know, everything after that is basically profit. So there's no real risk besides the fact it doesn't work. And, you know, you could see the controllers there too, and the controllers are worth about $25 each, providing they work. So I can see that there's at least some profit to be made. But I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to play the video game lottery, the Facebook Marketplace video game lottery. Now, I messaged at about the 18-minute mark, you know, 18 minutes after the listing had been live. And from there, I was out the door 15 minutes later. The thing is, when it comes to video games, it is the most brutal category on Facebook Marketplace. You need to be within, like, I don't know, 10 minutes of it going up for you to get the bundle, for you to get the deal. If you're messaging, like if it's been up for an hour, chances are like you've missed out, right? So I told the guy at the 18 minute mark that I'll come right now. I have cash in hand, and you know, I'll leave the house right now. And he said, yep, come on out. And that's it. I jumped in the car. I drove out. It was a chance to go to the old stomping grounds in Newtown. I used to live there, so it was nice to get back out there and drive down those horribly thin streets. And I got there, and the guy actually said to me, I asked him if he received a lot of messages, and he was like, fuck, yes. He was like, dude, fuck, I received a lot. And he said to me the reason he gave me the deal was because I didn't ask what the games were. So I think, you know, I message at the 18 minute mark. I think, you know, that 8 minutes, those the time before he would have been inundated with people asking about what games they were. And I was somebody that was like, I've got it. Like, I'm coming out. Let's do it. For better or for worse, that's really how you're going to be able to get, you know, video game deals on Marketplace. Any other, if you have to ask a question, I really don't think you're going to be able to buy it. So I got back home and I went through the bundle. It was all in a bag. So I waited until I got home. It made the drive back easier, a bit more exciting, because I was like, fuck, I wonder what the games are. I wonder what is inside this fucking binder. Like, am I holding thousands of dollars worth of games? Like, I fucking hope so. So I went through, the bag. What we had, I'll read it out to you. We had the PS2 console, the memory card. We had 10 games, 2 SingStar microphones, and 3 controllers, plus the mystery folder. Unfortunately, the games fucking sucked. The games that were in the cases, nothing really of note. We had the Canis Canem Edit, also known as Bully, worth about $30. We had GTA 3, which is worth like $25, and everything else was really around that $10 mark. We even had like Buzz, we had SingStar, we had fucking FIFA 06, which if you've been in a thrift store is the FIFA game that is in thrift stores constantly. We had a tennis game, a cricket game, nothing of note. I added up all the value just from that, not including the mystery folder, and the total value going on eBay sold comps is around $397. So more than what we paid for it, but nothing that stands out. No home run yet. And even with those sold comps, you know, it includes $6.67 for FIFA 06. I'm not going to even bother doing that. You know, I think I could make maybe $200 if I lot this stuff up. So yeah, nothing exciting, mostly junk. The value was mostly from, you know, the console and accessories. But what was inside the mystery folder? This is the moment of truth. Are we going to find a Silent Hill game? You know, Silent Hill, if you find it, if you get like Shattered Memories, which is a PlayStation 2 game, it's worth like $366, because I looked up the comps. There's other ones, $180, $200. This game and this series is so popular on PlayStation. By the way, if you want to learn how to spot like valuable games, go to flipvideo.com. It's a game that I created, 100% free. We use price charting values, and it's like flashcards. There's like 3 choices that come up, and you have to pick which video game is the most expensive in order to get a point and move on. I've done that before. I do it regularly just to like brush up on my video game knowledge, and I can usually tell if a game's good just based on looking at the cover. So here we go. We have the folder, we open it up, and on one of the very first pages, what do I see? A copy of Silent Hill. My heart skips a beat. I'm like, holy shit. What is this fucking case? I take a moment, I look at it a bit closer, and I'm thinking, wait a second. This is a fucking fake game. This game is faker than a Rolex and a Vinny's. This is completely fake. You can tell just by looking at it. The print is horrible. It's all pixelated. It doesn't have like a proper video game title underneath. It is fake. And then I look a bit more in this folder. The entire fucking thing is full of fake games. All these games are pirated. They're counterfeit games. This is a massive, massive L. This is such a huge disappointment. I've driven out to fucking Newtown to pick up these games. You know, I went in there all rosy, like, oh yeah, I get to like go back to where I used to live. It'll be a nice day. You know, sun is shining and fucking like, the leaves are falling off the trees for some reason in winter. No, now it's the exact opposite. I had to drive out to fucking Newtown in those horrible streets with the fucking ugly ass trees and fucking people with labubus on their backpacks just for this fucking folder full of counterfeit games. But then I think, well, Matt, this is what you get for playing the fucking Facebook Marketplace video game lottery. You get counterfeit games. So I don't know. I mean, we do have some value in the console and the other things. I've put it up on eBay for like $220. I'll break even at least. I'll make a couple of bucks. But yeah, video games on Marketplace, it's a tough category. If all the games were shown, I wouldn't have bought it. I wouldn't have driven out there. But, you know, flip the script a bit. If there was really good games here and the games were shown and it was still only priced $100, I would have been beaten to pace, you know, been with pace. People would have gone out and got it before me because I messaged so late. And it's crazy to think you're messaging so late and it's like a listing that was up for 18 minutes. But anyway, I have the video of all of that. I'm going to put on social media today. So make sure you check out both Instagram and TikTok and you'll be able to see the disappointment when I take these games home. Now, the next Facebook Marketplace deal isn't as exciting, but it did have, or I at least thought, would be able to make a lot of money. So Thomas and Friends, or Thomas the Tank Engine as a category, is something that I got over really fucking quickly. But I'm a sucker for rare toys, and I'm a sucker especially when it comes to rare toys being fully boxed. So I found on Marketplace a very, very early 2000s Thomas and Friends Talkin Action Magic Rail set. In its original box by the company Tommy, and it's like, you know, chucks some batteries in Thomas. He goes around a track, and when he hits certain tracks, he says something, or he like does a little song. Now, this set is really fucking rare. We have no active listings and very, very little in the sold. We do have one set that's outside of the box, and that sold for $310. And we do have a boxed version, but that sold for $276. Now, the weird thing about this is I looked at the $310 comp, and everything on the track and like the little like railway station that comes with it is in Japanese, and then the boxed version is also in Japanese. So I think maybe it was like a set that came out in Japan and very limited over here in Australia, or at least like in English speaking countries. The thing that attracted me to this listing was I could tell just based on the graphics that this was older, and I've known, like, just from experience, that older Thomas the Tank Engine does really, really well. And just from, you know, other knowledge, that boxed things or boxed vintage playsets or toys, you know, collectors like a good box. It was like maybe a month or two ago that I was able to find that 1980s Mask playset, and I bought that, you know, strictly for the box, and that box alone sells for $120. So I thought, well, maybe it like bleeds over into the Thomas category. I have no idea. So I paid $25 for this. I drove out to pick it up. But unfortunately, once I opened it up, I realized two things. The first was that it's missing the most valuable piece, which was the train. It was missing Thomas, you know, the train that goes over the tracks that makes him say those words. And I reread the title, and the title is, and I quote, Thomas Train Set, Blue Plastic Pieces, Talkin' Action Magic Rail Set. I must have completely, you know, skipped over that when I was, you know, reading it. The blue plastic pieces, I think, was this seller trying to, you know, say that that's all that was in there. But when I say that, the listing didn't make any mention whatsoever that it was incomplete or it was missing like the most crucial fucking part. And the most one of the annoying things is I sent her a message and I said, does it have the main pieces inside? And she wrote back, hey, yes, I think so. So, I mean, she said, quote, my kids played with it once when they got it, but it doesn't connect with their wooden stuff. So it just sat there in the cupboard. I remember it was all working. Really, it's a bit of a collector's item, antique. So I don't know. I thought that this, you know, I might not have got all of the individual pieces, but I would have got like at least the main thing. Like without the train, none of the other stuff really matters. So what we're going to do is we're going to put it to a test to see if collectors value the box for Thomas. This is like really all we can do. Apart from that Thomas, that other pieces were there, but they're like the blue plastic pieces and like a couple of trees and like a stop sign. This stuff, I mean, it can't be worth that much. The blue plastic train pieces, like the tracks, I'm pretty sure you can buy those, or they're the standard tracks that come in all the Thomas things. So yeah, we're going to see if people value the boxes. I decided to put it up for auction. You know, the main reason I do auctions is just for fun and just for a bit of excitement. I know for a fact it'll be out of my place within 7 days. This isn't a $300 home run, but it's going to create a bit of excitement for me and spruce up my fucking boring, monotonous life. So I put it up, $24.99 starting bid. It's been up for 2 days and we're sitting at 115 views, 7 watches, and a current bidding price of, drumroll please, $26. So I don't know how much it's going to sell for, honestly. If somebody buys the Thomas, and I thought about doing this myself, they would have a complete set. However, there's none out there. There really isn't. So I don't know. Maybe somebody will buy it. What do you think? Do you think it's going to sell? And I put up a poll on Flip Weekly if you want to go onto the newsletter and submit your opinion. How much you think the set will sell for? I've written $30 or less, $30 to $50, $50 to $75, or $75 up. For me personally, I think it's going to go for $30 to $50. I don't have much hope in this set. I think that the value lies strictly in the actual Thomas, the train, not the other little pieces. The box might get some value, but I really don't think the box is like a $50 box. I think it's not that old compared to like some of the other boxes, like that mask box I was talking about earlier was from the 80s. So that is worth $120. This box from like the very early 2000s, maybe $30 to $50. So yeah, that's what I think it will go for, $30 to $50. You let me know. And yeah, we'll move on. Let's talk about what I sold for this week. Now, my average sale price that I'm aiming for is at least $100. This first item ticks that checkbox. It's a Warhammer 40,000 book. Now, you need to be looking out for Warhammer 40,000. For some reason, I can't spot the difference in a simple puzzle book, but you drop me in front of a thrift store with thousands of books and I can spot that Warhammer 40,000 logo from a mile away. Now, most books, they have the title on the spine, the author's name on the spine, maybe a publisher's mark. These Warhammer 40,000 or Warhammer 40K books, they have the logo at the very top. And once you are able to spot that logo, you're going to have these jump out to you. I've bought and sold these numerous times in the past. This book has sold for $99.95. I bought it for $6. Only last month, June 15th, and it sold July 3rd, so not even a full month. I think I have a Warhammer book listed up right now for like over $250, so you need to be finding these. It's really bizarre how often I'm able to find them, and you know, I talk about them all the time, but you need to be flipping these books if you want to be in the book category, because it's easy money. They're mostly out of print right now, so the demand is high. Let's talk about something I found in a garage sale. And I didn't pay a single cent for it. This was quite a long time ago. I think it was November of last year. I went to this sale. There wasn't too much that I bought. I think I got some VHSs, old school, like pop culture VHS that all have gone on to sell mostly. And as I was walking out, I found in a box on the ground all these old cinema cups. There was Batman and Robin, there was Space Jam, and this cup was a movie theater promo from 1996 for the movie Space Jam. On the top of the cup had this miniature game of basketball. There was two sides. There was a barrier in the middle with a tiny circle hole, and on each side of the cup had almost like a pinball flicking motion where the ball would sit on this little groove and you would flick the handle and the ball, and the aim is to get the ball through the hole on the wall. So it would go from one side to the other. I've never seen this before. I couldn't find a single comp online and I ended up listing it for $100. Because of that price, it didn't sell, obviously, until now. I received a offer from somebody in Mexico who offered $50, and I decided to say yes. They ended up paying $42.40 in postage. So this cup that I got for free from a garage sale, a movie theater promo cup, has sold for $92.40. I mean, you need to check this out on the Flip Weekly newsletter, because it's a pretty cool cup. And if you're a Space Jam, maybe a Michael Jordan, Looney Tunes collector, it's something that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, I couldn't find any active listings, no sold listings, nothing in the archives, not even in Google. So yeah, it would be a, maybe not a holy grail, but something that a Space Jam collector wouldn't have. And movie theater promo cups, you can still make money on them. You know, I've made money with movie theater promo popcorn buckets. It's such an unusual niche, but people make a lot of money doing it. You know, sometimes when new Disneyland, for example, popcorn buckets come out, you can see there's a whole category. There's like a whole hashtag on TikTok about, you know, Disney popcorn buckets. You see people going to Disneyland, picking up like 10, 15 of these popcorn buckets. They're getting filmed and then they go home and sell it on eBay, and there's like whole conversations about this can't possibly be profitable. And then everyone's like, well, maybe if they live close by, they have an annual pass, they can go in. People fully break down like the numbers of like this guy's side hustle of buying out like Disney popcorn buckets. But it is a thing. It's a thing. If you see them out in the wild and you can get them, you know, usually pretty cheap, I would say pick them up. I don't know what the sell-through rate for individual ones are. There would be some that are more popular than others. In a thrift store the other day, I saw like these Star Wars Rise of Skywalker movie theater promo cups, and it was in the shape of a lightsaber. They sell online for like $25-$30, and they're in a thrift store for like $3. I didn't pick them up just because there's a little return for me, but yeah, if you're able to find them, people would just think they're, you know, plastic cups. Get them for free, just like I did with this. And you know, for a $50 sale price, it's a category that shouldn't be underestimated, really. Now, the next item that sold, I talked about last week or maybe the week before. It was the Foot Rot Flats Jigsaw Puzzle. I told you this puzzle was going to sell quickly. I bought it for $6. This is the factory sealed one, the one that was in the best condition. You know, I found three of them in a Savers. It sold for $150. $6 was the purchase price. Less than 2 weeks, and now that means that I'm going to list up the other two that I have, the ones that look like they've been fucking battered and bruised. I'm going to put them up for an auction probably at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday night. That way, after a week, the end time will be, you know, 7 p.m. once people are home from work. And it'll be interesting to see what they end up selling for, because these other two that I found were in, like, honestly horrible condition. They looked like they were stored in somebody's garage out in the paint section. It looks like somebody dropped a heavy item onto one of them, but they still look almost sealed. Now, with this one that I sold, I turned down multiple $100 offers, but this one came in for $150. I thought, why not? I've been really itching to put the other two up for, you know, the fun auction. And I just like that it's out the door. The thing that annoys me, though, with eBay, and we should start a fucking, like, a change.org petition for this. People that accept offers or send out offers, you cannot ask for immediate payment. They have 3 days to make that payment. Can we please put together a fucking petition so that people have to pay instantly? Because the buyers that are always, like, late with payments are the ones that are accepting offers or sending out those offers. 100% of the time, you know, the only time I'm waiting for payment is when people are doing those fucking offers, and it drives me nuts because I have to send out, you know, messages saying, pay now, I'm going to fucking like relist it. And you just know that if you cancel it and relist it, they'll be like, oh, I was just about to pay this. Like, in the industry that I've been in, when you're waiting on like a client to send back something to you or waiting on like a payment from somebody, there's always the exact same excuse, okay? The excuse that I hear constantly from my clients or clients in general are, sorry, I've been in the hospital, or sorry, my partner was in the hospital. It happens all the time, and it's a joke that I make constantly with friends and family that my clients are like the sickest people on earth because they're always in the hospital. And it's just like an excuse to say, oh, I've been lazy or I've just haven't done it for one reason or another. And I did not think I would start to hear that excuse selling on eBay. But what do you know? This puzzle, when I accepted the $150 best offer, I was say like 48 hours before the guy paid and I sent multiple follow-ups. And what do you know? I receive a message saying, oh, sorry, my wife was in the hospital. And it's like, oh my God, I cannot believe I'm getting that fucking excuse when I'm trying to sell a jigsaw puzzle. You've sent the offer for $150. You must have the money. Why are you waiting like 2 days to pay? Like, you don't go to a grocery store, leave and say, I'll come back in 2 days to pay. If you're buying a $150 jigsaw puzzle, you have to have the money to pay right then and there. I know it's such a small thing, but I know that a lot of you would be experiencing it with eBay. And, you know, if you're running a small business, if you have a business right now and you're waiting on accounts receivable, if you're waiting for people to pay, it's one of the hardest things to deal with in a business is clients paying or customers paying if you have to rely on them to pay you for like services rendered. It is something that is something that can honestly kill a business if people don't pay you like at a quick rate, you know, if they don't pay you fast enough. So I don't know why eBay has this thing where for some reason you can choose that buy it now items, they have to have the money. But if they send an offer or if you send an offer, they don't have to have the money. Where is the logic in that? I think it's really poor, like settings wise for eBay to allow that. I think we need to fucking start a petition, a change.org petition, and make it so if you send an offer, if you accept an offer, you have to have the money and pay for it right then and there. Otherwise, you are not allowed to accept it. It's the most frustrating thing, especially when you have an item that has a ton of people watching it. It's getting some momentum and then somebody buys it and they're like, oh, sorry, you know, I can't pay for it now. It's like, oh, fuck you, man. Like this guy, wife is in the hospital. She might be in the hospital, but I highly, highly doubt it. Only because I hear it all the time. Oh, sorry, Matt, I didn't pay like your bill. I was in the hospital. It's like, oh, you're in the hospital. Like everyone's always in the fucking hospital. We do not have that sick of a society. Maybe we do, but fucking hell. Anyway, I'm going to list up the other two foot rot flat jigsaw puzzles. You haven't seen, or you would have seen the condition if you read the Flip Weekly newsletter. I'm going to ask you the question, what do you think the final selling price for those other two will be? I'm going to lot them up, put it up for an auction. Remember, these are rare puzzles. You don't see them. You don't see them often. Do you think it'll sell for less than $150 or more than $150? So there'll be two. The one that I just sold was just one. These two are in worse condition though. So what do you think? I personally think they might sell for the same amount, $150. I'm going to start them at what am I starting them at? 99 cents. And I think I'm going to do free postage too, just to like make it a bit more dangerous for myself. So yeah, what do you reckon? The next item that sold, something was so fucking cute. It sold in just 3 days. It was the Pingu VHS. I mean, Pingu is so goddamn cute. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Pingu is, yeah, so goddamn cute. And there's like a huge collector's market for this show and has an insane sell-through rate. So it wasn't really a surprise that it sold in 3 days. You would remember that there was a identical comp that was around the $150 mark and it had a couple of people watching it. I decided to list this one for only $50, which is what all the others were selling for. And that's probably why it sold so quickly. So whether it's a garage sale or a thrift store, always look out for those old school, you know, video cassette tapes. And you might get lucky like this, or get lucky like the Australian YouTuber Foulmouth Flipper. Now, if you go onto his YouTube channel, you're going to be able to see a YouTube short where he found a VHS tape for $2 at a garage sale, and it sold for $500 in just 26 minutes. I recommend looking at that. Let's give Foulmouth Flipper some views. I'm not going to tell you what the VHS is, but go and check that out. And it's something that I check, it's something that I look out for when I'm at thrift stores and garage sales now, because I want to find that fucking VHS and turn $2 into $500 just like that, because those are the returns I'm looking for. Now, the other item that sold in 2 days was from the Facebook Marketplace video game lottery. It was a PlayStation 2. I lotted it up. A couple of the high value games. I got rid of the cheaper games. I think that for me, if I put all like the Buzz games, if I put the SingStar, not the SingStar, like the FIFAs in a listing as like a bulk console lot, a bulk like bundle deal, I think like you would scroll through the games and you'd see the low value games and you might think, okay, this is a low value listing. So I just put the better games there. I don't know what I'll do with the other ones. Maybe donate them to Savers, get like that 20% discount, whatever it is. But yeah, that Marketplace deal wasn't a complete waste of time. It sold for $220 plus $25 shipping. So we make some profit. I think after all fees, I make like $79. So it is what it is. No home runs there, but yeah, the thrill of that folder alone made it worth it to me. The next item that sold was maybe two podcasts ago. It was the Jurassic World puppet. It was bought for $7.99 or $7.95 from Savers. Sold for $150 plus post on the way somewhere within Australia. Now, this little dino hand puppet, I knew was going to sell quickly because it was the only one within Australia. And looking at sold comps, there was one sold in Australia for $150. So being able to buy that for $7.99 at a Savers and having it out the door within 12 days, like, that thing was really cool too. You know, I said last week, it's a bit eerie when you're walking down the thrift store and you're seeing in the mirrors how realistic this little puppet dinosaur looks. It legit looks like you're holding a baby raptor. And I'm sure if I went into the post office just holding this, someone would make a comment. It honestly looks really cool. Like I'm not the biggest fan of hand puppets. It's a weird thing to say, I guess. But this one just looks really cool. If you haven't seen a photo, jump on the Flip Weekly newsletter. Yeah, it's baby blue from Jurassic World with a Ranger's glove underneath it, and blinks its eyes, moves its mouth, makes some sounds too. I know the Jurassic World movie has just come out in the cinema right now. It's doing really well in the box office. Not too well with the critics' reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, but maybe that's another reason why it sold. And you got to really think about that when you're buying and selling items. Like, would you buy an item, say like an NRL football item now if the footy wasn't on? Maybe not, because it's not in people's minds, but Jurassic World would be, you know, forefront in people's minds. They're going to see the movie. It's school holidays at the moment too, so kids are at home, and you know, parents are thinking about their kids. Not that they don't think about them the rest of the fucking year, but yeah, really cool purchase. And Jurassic World toys in general are something to keep an eye out for. Now, there's a couple of other sales that I'm not going to get through. You can check them out on the Flip Weekly newsletter. There's things there that are like selling for over $100, and there's quick flips there too, so check them out. But I think now I want to move on to secondhand opinions. This concept is really simple. I'm going to throw up a controversial or at least like spicy reselling topic. I'll present my argument and it's going to be poorly thought out, and you're going to provide your own. Last week I asked you, should you give discounts to eBay users who claim to be disabled, on welfare, a senior or a pensioner? Now, this was after I got into a bit of a back and forth with an eBay buyer who sent me a lowball offer and told me all about his medical conditions and, you know, how generous he is with his money, and saying he has, you know, heart problems and therefore I should give him a humongous discount. And I just replied to him like, basically, who gives a fuck about your heart? Like, I'm trying to sell an item here. I don't give a fuck about it. So I told you that story, and if we look at the poll results, a lot of you are, I mean, majority of you are impervious to those sort of sob stories. We have No, I wouldn't give a discount. That wins with 93% of the votes. So barely anyone said that they would give a discount after hearing those sob stories. I mean, not sob stories. A person claiming that they're disabled if they're on welfare or if they're a senior or a pensioner. So yeah, I think most people see through that. I think if somebody brings it up in an eBay setting, they might be lying, or they're just using it as an excuse for why they should get a discount. To the few of you that said they would give a discount, please link me to your eBay store, because I'd love to tell you some sad tales about my life and go through your items and see if I can get a discount on something. I'll tell you everything that's wrong with my life right now. I don't care if it has nothing to do with your item. I'm going to tell you all about it, and maybe I can get a discount. But yeah, let's move on to this week's topic. And this week's topic is it wrong to cancel an order and relist it at a higher price if it sells too quickly? Okay, here's a scenario for you. You list an item, it sells within minutes. You know, you get that good feeling, you get the dopamine rush. You hear that eBay ka-ching, you're excited, you're happy. But then you get another feeling, right? It feels like your heart sinks, because you start to second guess yourself. You say to yourself, did I underprice this item? Am I leaving money on the table? Some resellers, I think, would cancel that sale and relist it for more money. But is that wrong? For me, personally, I think it's fine. But, you know, to be honest with you, I'd never do it. Because here's the thing. If something sells instantly, I don't think it's a failure. Like, in my eyes, I don't see that as a failure. I'm going to take that as a lesson. You did everything right. You sourced the item. You nailed the demand. You obviously looked at the sell-through rate. You just failed on the price. So, I mean, that's part of the game. You'd rather take the win, ship it out, and just make a mental note for the next time. Canceling, to me, just feels like poor form. But I'd love to know your thoughts. So, again, is it wrong to cancel an order, relist an item for a higher price if it sells too quickly? So there's a poll on flipweekly.com on the newsletter. Yes, it's wrong, or no, it's fine. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can vote in that poll. You can email in, submit a form on the website, even get in touch via social media. Just tell me your thoughts about that. This is usually where I would leave you for the week. I would say my goodbyes. I'd wish you well. Happy hunting on the weekend with your thrifting, with your garage sales. But this week, we have something different. Welcome to the first and hopefully the last episode or segment of Flip Weekly After Dark. Now, as you know, this week we found a book series. It's called A Court of Thorn and Roses. I thought it was your standard fantasy book, but no, it is something a lot different. Now, A Court of Mist and Fury, it's the second book in Sarah J. Maas's A Court of Thorns and Roses series. My girlfriend told me to read chapter 55 of this book, and after about 60 seconds, I had to stop. I was laughing, I was cringing, I was thinking, what the fuck did I buy? I remember reading it in the office and literally turning away from the book and getting up and walking away, just thinking, what on earth is this? Now, I'm not hating on the book. You might like it. I'm just saying it was not what I expected. So today I present to your reading of chapter 55. A warning to you though, this is entirely inappropriate for children. So get rid of them if they're in the room. I'm going to give you context up until this chapter and then we'll proceed. Now I'm going to assume at this point that most have stopped listening, and I don't blame you. I really don't. So this would be an intimate reading between those who are left and me, which is really creepy. But yeah, this chapter, it went viral when the book first came out for being, for lack of a better word, intimate and emotionally charged. So here's the context up until now. There's a character in the book, the protagonist. Her name is Feyre. She was a mortal and she killed a fairy, and she got taken to live in a magical spring quarters punishment. She fell in love with Tamlin, the High Lord, but had to go through trials to save him, brutal trials to save him, dying in the process and being reborn as a High Fae. Now, in the second book, A Court of Mist and Fury, she's emotionally wrecked and she's stuck in a controlling relationship with somebody called Tamlin. Now, enter Rhysand. We'll call him Rhys, the mysterious High Lord of the Night Court, who had a bargain with Faerie to spend 1 week a month with him. Now, he ends up rescuing her, emotionally and literally, and she discovers his court is nothing like she expected. So as Faerie heals, trains and gains confidence, her connection with Rhys grows deeper, and it turns out that they're mates, they're like soulmates. So chapter 55 is where this tension finally explodes. I'm just going to stop this for a second because I'm going to get a stiff drink as I prepare for this, and then let's start chapter 55. Okay, I'm back. All right. I hope you are ready for this. I think I am. Chapter 55. I watched him consume every spoonful, his eyes darting between where I stood and the soup. When he was done, he set down his spoon. "Aren't you going to say anything?" he said at last. "I was going to tell you what I decided the moment I saw you on the threshold." Rhys twisted in his seat toward me. "And now?" Aware of every breath, every movement, I sat in his lap. His hands gently braced my hips as I studied his face. "And now I want you to know, Rhysand, that I love you. I want you to know." His lips trembled and I brushed away the tear that escaped down his cheek. "I want you to know," I whispered, "that I am broken and healing, but every piece of my heart belongs to you, and I am honored, honored to be your mate." His arms wrapped around me and he pressed his forehead to my shoulder, his body shaking. I stroked a hand through his silken hair. "I love you," I said again. I hadn't dared say those words in my head, and I'd endure every second of it over again so I could find you. And if war comes, we'll face it. Together, I won't let them take me from you, and I won't let them take you from me either. Rhys looked up, his face gleaming with tears. He went still as I leaned in, kissing away one tear, then the other, as he had once kissed away mine. When my lips were wet and salty with them, I pulled back far enough to see his eyes. "You're mine," I breathed. His body shuddered with what might have been a sob, but his lips found my own. It was gentle, soft, the kiss he might have given me if we'd been granted time and peace to meet across our two separate worlds, to court each other. I slid my arms around his shoulders, opening my mouth to him, and his tongue slipped in, caressing my own. "Mate, my mate." He hardened against me and I groaned into his mouth. The sound snapped whatever leash he'd had on himself, and Rhysand scooped me up in a smooth movement before laying me flat on the table, amongst and on top of all the paints. He deepened the kiss, and I wrapped my legs around his back, hooking him closer. He tore his lips from my mouth to my neck, where he dragged his teeth and tongue down my skin as his hands slid under my sweater and went up to cup my breasts. I arched into the touch and lifted my arms as he peeled away my sweater in one easy motion. Rhys pulled back to survey me, my body naked from the waist up. Paint soaked into my hair, my arms, but all I could think of was his mouth as it lowered to my breast and sucked, his tongue flicking against my nipple. I'm just going to stop and say, what the fuck am I doing right now? I plunged my fingers into his hair and he braced a hand beside my head, smack atop a pallet of paint. He let out a low laugh and I watched, breathless, as he took that hand and traced a circle around my breast, then lower until he painted a downward arrow beneath my belly button. "Lest you forget where this is going to end," he said. I snarled at him, a silent order, and he laughed again, his mouth finding my other breast. He ground his hips against me, teasing me so horribly that I had to touch him, had to just feel more of him. There was paint all over my hands, my arms, but I didn't care as I grabbed at his clothes. He shifted enough to let me remove them, weapons and leather thudding to the ground, revealing that beautiful tattooed body, the powerful muscles, and wings now peeking above them. Now this is the moment where I think, wait, what? Wait, what? Wings? This guy has fucking wings. What? We continue. "My mate, my mate." His mouth crashed into mine, his bare skin so warm against my own, and I gripped his face, smearing paint there too. Smearing it in his hair until great streaks of blue and red and green ran through it. His hands found my waist, and I bucked my hips off the table to help him remove my socks, my leggings. At this point, by the way, just to cut in, when she said bucked my hips, we've just gone from wings. I'm thinking, wait, is this chick a fucking horse? But no, we go back. Reese pulled back again, and I let out a bark of protest. Now here I'm thinking, wait, no, she's not a horse, she's a fucking dog. That choked off into a gasp as he gripped my thighs and yanked me to the edge of the table, threw paints and brushes and cups of water, hooked my legs over his shoulder to rest on either side of those beautiful wings, and knelt before me. Knelt on those stars and mountains inked on his knees, he would bow for no one and nothing, but his mate, his equal. The first lick of Rhysand's tongue set me on fire. I want you splayed out on the table like my own personal feast. He growled his approval at my moan, my taste, and unleashed himself on me entirely. A hand pinning my hips to the table, he worked me in great sweeping strokes, and when his tongue slid inside me, I reached up to grip the edge of the table, to grip the edge of the world that I was very near to falling off. He licked and kissed his way to the apex of my thighs, just as his fingers replaced where his mouth had been, pumping inside me as he sucked, his teeth scraping ever so slightly. I bowed off the table as my climax shuttered through me, splintering my consciousness into a million pieces. He kept licking me, fingers still moving. Reese, I rasped. Now, I wanted him now, but he remained kneeling, feasting on me, that hand pinning me to the table. I went over the edge again, and only when I was trembling, half sobbing, limp with pleasure, did Reese rise from the floor. He looked me over, naked, covered in paint, his own face and body smeared with it, and gave me a slow, satisfied male smile. "You're mine," he snarled, and hefted me up into his arms. I wanted the wall. I wanted him to just take me against the wall, but he carried me into the room I'd been using and set me down on the bed with heartbreaking gentleness. Now, just as cut in here, I'm reading this and I'm thinking, this dude has wings. Why would you want to get taken against the wall? Wouldn't you be like, fucking fly me into the sky? Fuck me in the sky. Like, have a 747 just flying on by. Just give him a bit of a wave as you're getting fucked by this, what I assume is like a bird. Okay? Wholly naked, I watched as he unbuttoned his pants and the considerable length of him sprang free. I don't know how much more of this is left. I literally feel like I'm reading out porn. My mouth went dry at the sight of it. I wanted him, wanted every glorious inch of him in me, wanted to claw at him until our souls were forged together. He didn't say anything as he came over me, wings tucked in tight. Had never gone to bed with a female while his wings wore out, but I was his mate. He would yield only for me. And I wanted to touch him. I leaned up, reaching over his shoulder to caress the powerful curve of his wing. Reese shuddered, and I watched his cock twitch. "Play later," he ground out. "Indeed." His mouth found mine, the kiss open and deep, a clash of tongues and teeth. He laid me down on the pillows and I locked my legs around his back, careful of the wings. Though I stopped caring as he nudged at my entrance, Jesus Christ. And paused. "Play later," I snarled into his mouth. Why? What is this fucking play later shit? He said it earlier, play later. She just said it, play later. It's like fucking weird thing to say, right? Like, use your words, play later. It's like Kevin from The Office. Why use long words when small words do trick? Anyway. Reese laughed in a way that skittered along my bones and slid in and in and in. I could hardly breathe, hardly think beyond where our bodies were joined. He stilled inside me, letting me adjust, and I opened my eyes to find him staring down at me. "Say it again," he murmured. I knew what he meant. "You're mine," I breathed. Reese pulled out slightly and thrust back in slow, so torturously slow. "You're mine," I gasped out. Again, he pulled out, then thrust in. "You're mine." Again, faster, deeper, this time. I felt it then, the bond between us like an unbreakable chain, like an undimmable ray of light. With each pounding stroke, the bond glowed clearer and brighter and stronger. "You're mine," I whispered, dragging my hands through his hair, down his back, across his wings. My friend through many dangers, my lover who had healed my broken and weary soul, my mate who had waited for me against all hope despite all odds. I moved my hips in time with his. He kissed me over and over, and both of our faces turned damp. Every inch of me burned and tightened, and my control slipped entirely as he whispered, "I love you." Release tore through my body, and he pounded into me hard and fast, drawing out my pleasure until I felt and saw and smelled that bond between us, until our sense merged, and I was his, and he was mine, and we were the beginning and middle and end. I fucking wish this was the end. How much longer do we have to go? Okay, there's no fucking way I'm reading all of this. This goes on for fucking ever. We're already at 15 minutes. I'll keep going until we get to, I don't know, where he flies away. Reese roared as he came. Okay, he just came, so we must be near the end. Right? Reese roared as he came, slamming into the hilt. Outside, the mountains trembled, the remaining snow rushing from them in a cascade of glittering white, only to be swallowed up by the waiting night below. Silence fell, interrupted only by our panting breaths. I took his paint-smeared face between my own colourful hands and made him look at me. His eyes were radiant like the stars I'd painted once long ago, and I smiled at Reese as I let that mating bond shine clear and luminous between us. Now, I think that will do it. I think I'm about weirded out enough. As I'm reading that, I'm just thinking, like, this was such a bad idea. And I'm thinking, like, I should just go back and edit that part where I said I was going to read this out, because this is just, I think I imagined it being weirder than what it was. And the fact that I was reading, like, what turned out to be something that was, you know, it's just a sex scene, I'm thinking, like, oh, it's weird that now I'm reading this out. Like, it, like, the text isn't that weird, but the fact I'm reading it to you makes it fucking weirder. Very, very weird, very creepy. That's on me. That chapter, it took me by surprise, the fact that this cunt had wings. Going into it, I knew nothing about it, but yeah, I thought it was going to be like, I don't know, he flew away with her and was like fucking her in the sky or something. The fact that it was just a normal sex scene and he had wings is, it's different, but it's not as weird as I thought it was going to be. So I have to apologize to anyone that actually listened to that. Celebrities have read this out online. When I was doing some research, I could see that some people had done TikToks reading some of this out. I'm sorry that you had to hear that on a fucking reselling podcast. I don't understand how we got here. If this makes it into the podcast, then I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Please come back next week. We will not have a Flip Weekly After Dark next week. I'm sorry. Have a good weekend. I'll hopefully see you again next week.
Flip, 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 flip,